Good evening. Welcome to another broadcast of the Rifleman Show on Appleseed Radio. I'd like to welcome everyone to the program tonight. And this is our third broadcast, and it seems like a lot of people are tuning in, which is always makes us very happy. The Rifleman Show is a broadcast of the Appleseed Radio, which is sponsored by the Revolutionary War Veterans Association, and they are sponsoring Appleseed Radio with the Appleseed Project. The Appleseed Project is designed to teach rifle marksmanship, rifle safety, and also teach a bit of the American heritage, American culture, and can reconnect us to the Founding Fathers. And we do that by discussing the events of April 19, 1775, Lexington, Concord, and Battle Road. If you'd like to learn more about the organization, you can just log on to appleseedinfo.org or rwva.org. That's the address for our website. Once you log into appleseedinfo.org, you get all the information you need about upcoming events, different shoots, what we do, why we do it. You can also click on the link for the forum and get on the forum and read some of the stuff that we talk about. It's a working forum, which means that the discussion is geared toward moving the program forward, not toward socializing. Because that's our main goal at Appleseed, is to move the program forward. Appleseed, there's been quite a bit of discussion lately about what Appleseed is and what it's not, and it's basically just what we say it is. It's the rifle marksmanship, rifle safety, and American heritage. And what the Appleseed program is designed to do is to wake people up, get them off their couch, and get them involved in their life in rifle marksmanship in the government, making sure that they truly are the we the people in the document that created the United States of America. We have, we're at the end of our year. We're Appleseed events for 2008. We still have one Appleseed shoot left in Alamogordo, New Mexico, December 27th and 28th. I was just in Las Cruces, New Mexico, for an instructor boot camp. That's where we give the instructors in training, we give them all the information that we can in 2 days to get them ready to become instructors in training. It was a great weekend. Met some really great people, and the people that I worked with are definitely some of the best people in New Mexico and West Texas. And they're really going to do a lot toward moving the program ahead in New Mexico. Every time I meet an Appleseeder, I'm just astounded at what good people they are. Not just the instructors, but just the people that show up at the events. When we have an Appleseed shooting event, we may have anywhere between 20 and 100 people. And out of those people, there's almost no one that I wouldn't feel comfortable with giving my car keys and asking them to go get something from my home or loaning them a rifle or anything else. The Appleseed program just seems to bring out the best in people and bring the best people to the events. And we have a very varied type of people that are in the program, a real cross-cut of the American society. We have everything from commercial fishermen to doctors, lawyers, nuclear scientists, you name it, and somebody is doing it in the Office C program. We have just a great group of instructors now, and I don't know if it has something to do with if it's just a coincidence or if there's something to it that some of our best instructors are airline pilots. And if they're not an airline pilot, they are some type of private pilot. So I always make sure that whenever I fly to an event somewhere, that I try and hit up every pilot that I meet along the way. Okay. Now, we also have, being that it's close to the end of the year, we have a lot of events coming for the new year, 2009. We've got, well, we're going to have more than 100 events this coming year. And I'll tell you something else. We're going to have close to 50 of those events or more just on one day. And that's going to be April 19th, 2009. As I said, we have an attachment to that date because that is the day that our country was born. Not very many countries can trace their birth to a specific hour or day, but we can. It was April 19th, 1775. So this year we're going to have approximately 50 events spread out across the nation, 50 shooting events on the same day from coast to coast. And it's going to be a very, very exciting weekend, a very historic weekend. Beginning in January, we'll have a shoot in Davila, Texas, on the 6th and 7th. We have shoots in Corona, California, Peru, California, and Castle Rock, Washington, on the 13th and 14th. And then jumped on the end of the 2008. Those are the dates for 2008. 2009 will be January 3rd and 4th will be the shoot in Ramsar, North Carolina. That's our home range. We consider that to be sort of the Appleseed Mecca. Sooner or later, all the instructors do a pilgrimage to Ramsar to do a shooting event there. There'll be another shoot in Florida, January 10th and 11th. Davila, Texas, January 10th and 11th. Boulder City, Nevada, January 17th and 18th. Peru, California, January 17th and 18th. El Paso, Texas, January 17th and 18th. Sacramento, California, the 17th and 18th. And Hernando County, Florida, January 31st and February 1st. When I was in El Paso in New Mexico this last weekend, we also picked up another range in El Paso. It's a small range, only a 20 position range, but it's indoor, heated and cooled. So that's another great addition to the Appleseed range. All right, as we ended the last show with a cliffhanger of the second strike of the match in Concord. Before I get into that, I'm going to take a call from Fred. Fred's calling in, and he's going to talk to us. Hello, Fred.
Yeah.
How are you doing this evening?
Hey, I'm doing fine. I hear you're setting everybody up so they know what the coming schedule is going to be like. And you're absolutely correct when you say we're going to have more than 100 Appleseeds next year. Actually, our plan is to have 300 Appleseeds next year.
Yeah, and they're coming on every day. We're adding new locations. and new dates every day. So if you look at the Appleseed schedule at appleseedinfo.org, and you don't see one near you, but you know of a location that you can have one, get in touch with us, and we will paste you in. We'll make it happen. The Appleseed program has no problem with coming to you. You get us a place, and we will come. We'll bring a crew in, everything we need. We're a turnkey organization. We bring every single thing we need in. Instructors, targets, insurance, you name it, and we will be there. So if you don't see a location on the schedule, then get in touch with us, and we will pencil you in. So I'm amazed, Fred, at how fast this thing is going. I mean, if you look at just 2 years ago, remember we were jumping up and down because we thought we actually might make 50 Appleseed shooting events in 1 year. That was just 2 years ago, and now this year, I'm not saying that we're taking it lightly, but we're talking about 50 shoots on one weekend.
That's correct. Another way to look at it is that next year we will have more shoots every month than we had the entire first year of the program 3 years ago. That's a pretty impressive growth rate.
It is. I'm amazed by it every day, and it's keeping everybody moving. It's very fast paced, and I was talking about the Appleseed, the people that come to events and to the Appleseed instructors earlier, and I'm always amazed by the dedication, and by I think that you can judge sometimes a program's or an idea's success by how much the person who learned about it or people who've come to an event, how much the first thing they want to do is to try and let somebody else know about what they just experienced at an Appleseed. Like when you go to a good restaurant or you see a good movie or you find a good deal somewhere, the first thing you want to do is let somebody else know about it. And that is what is happening with the program. It's almost like an Appleseed virus. And once you've caught it, you really couldn't be more happy. You really couldn't wait to get other people involved in the program, because it is such a wonderful program, and it's filled with such great people.
Well, I'm hoping everybody in the program is going to help get the word out, because that's what we need most if we're going to keep this program growing. I don't need to tell you that the goal is to double this program every year so that next year we'll shake the hand of the 10,000th Appleseeder, the 10,000th person to have participated in the program. If we can continue doubling in the year 2012, what's that, 3 years off, 4 years off? The year 2012, one of us will shake the hand of the 100,000th Appleseeder. And if we can simply continue that doubling process on until four more years, until 2016, one of us will shake the hand of the 1,000,000th Appleseeder.
And, you know, that's if it goes along at the rate that it's going. But from what I've seen lately, that the number and the quality of the people that are becoming involved in the program, I think we're going to meet and exceed our goals much more rapidly than we had thought. It was very hard in the beginning because we were an unknown organization with a kind of a wacky idea that people didn't understand, and you know, any organization, it takes a while to work the kinks out of the program and to get people on board. And that's the only problem that we're really facing now, is getting the information out to people that we exist, because the program is such a great program that it sells itself. When you come to an Appleseed event and you go through the 2 days of the Appleseed, if you're still there on Sunday afternoon, if we haven't completely worn you out and run you off, then you are sold, and you're going to become a part of the organization and help push the message forward to the people. mean, that's what I found.
That's right. When you look at this program and the growth rate does seem to be accelerating. The first year we had 18 apple seeds. Our goal was 10, but we wound up having 18. The second year, which was last year, we had 47. That was more than double. And this year, I think we're, by the end of the year, we will be somewhere around 140. And again, that's way more than doubled. And next year at 300, we still will be doubling. And I wouldn't be surprised if our goal of 300 is not exceeded by maybe 50 or maybe even 100.
Right, because I see a lot of on the schedule page. I see a lot of places, a lot of new places, and I also see a lot of the places that I know that are existing that are going to come online aren't yet. So we're going to have a lot more events than what we have actually listed now. And then as people come, every time somebody comes to an event here, they want to take the program to their home, to their whatever city it is, because when we're starting out, we didn't have a lot of locations, and we still don't have as many as we're going to have, because we're going to have one in every city of every state sometime in the future. But at the last event we held here in Davila, we had people from Kansas City. We had people from Oklahoma. We had people from Russia. But we always have people that come from out of state somewhere. And what they'll tell me on Sunday is they say, hey, how can I get one here? How can we take this to our home? And I give them the information, and usually I'll get a call back from them or an email in the next 2 or 3 weeks with them on the road to setting up an event in their locality.
What makes this program unique and what kind of fills them with fire, I think, is the fact that everybody in this program is a volunteer. And they're not just your usual volunteers that sit at a table and, wrap bandages or pack boxes or something like that. These are volunteers who are driven. They're driven by a mission. And the mission, of course, is the feeling that a lot of us have had that for the last few decades, this country has been on the wrong track. And a lot of us compare that to, being on the deck of a sinking Titanic, and how when you look around, you see all your fellow Americans sitting in deck chairs. And knowing the ship's sinking, you have a strong belief that it's really not what Americans do when the ship's sinking. They don't sit in deck chairs. Unfortunately, our 21st century Americans have been raised to sit in the deck chairs, and they don't have any conception that the ship's sinking, or if they do, they don't seem to want to get out of their deck chairs. So the Appleseed program is about kind of reaching over, grabbing them, and saying, come on, let's go. This is, if the ship's sinking, we got to do something. And the answer is to bail. So here's a bucket. Let's get to bailing.
Well, that's what I liked about the Appleseed program. I think I mentioned it last week to the listeners, is that as one person, a lot of times you feel it's hard for you to do anything. And right now, Americans are. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of anxiety about what to do. And a lot of people don't know what to do. They don't know how they can help. And while they get a lot of information, information on the bad news channels, that tell them of the coming doom and crisis. Very, very seldom do you ever hear of any answers of anything of what you can do. And that's two things that the Appleseed program provides you. One, the Appleseed program message is a message of hope. It's not doom and gloom. It's not the sky is falling. You've got to dig yourself a bunker and get in there. Hoard your food. Defend it from your neighbors. That there is hope. That there is something that we can do together. And that really, that was a great message, you know, for me to hear. And to know that there is something, that there is an organization that can help put people on the right track, that can wake people up and get them off the couch. Because the number one problem in our country is that the people, a lot of the people are not even aware that there is a problem. And those that are, I think, are taking the ostrich approach, putting their head in the sand. If we can get them, if we can give them a little shake and smack the remote out of their hands and get them involved in doing something, I think that once they do become involved, they're very happy to help.
Our enemies in this country today are laziness, ignorance, and apathy. And I got to tell you, there is one thick blanket of that that covers this whole country. And you're exactly right when you talk about people who have anxiety and they don't know what to do. You know, the remedy for that is get them to an apple seed. Once they get to an apple seed, they won't have any more questions about what to do, because that's what our program is about. It's about saving this country. One of the things that you and I have both experienced in our first contacts with apple seeders when they come to an event or on the website or in some other communication is this notion of various threats. And you'll find some people are concerned about one threat, other people are concerned about another threat, whether it's global warming or you know, government too big, or you know, some hidden group that's controlling the world, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And over a period of time, we developed the notion that actually what you're doing when you talk about those threats is you're counting icebergs. You're standing on the deck of the Titanic, and you're saying, look over there, there's an iceberg. That's a big iceberg. And look over there, there's another iceberg. And it seems like a common sense notion that iceberg counting is not going to help you with the ship sinking.
Right, you just end up counting the icebergs and without doing anything about them.
Right, if you get
about,
the ship,
about your ship,
if you can stop the ship from sinking, getting educated and alert crew and captain, get the rudder fixed, you don't have to worry about those icebergs out there. The ship will be able to steer around all of them. The founders actually gave us the clue and the guidance. When you go and do a Google search on Revolutionary War quotes or founder quotes, you'll find founder after founder who made a statement somewhat like this, that as long as the American people are educated and alert, then liberty is not in danger. There's another quote, and I can't remember which founder said it. He said, put your faith in the American people. As long as they know what they're doing, you'll never have to worry about liberty being in danger. And that's our problem today, is that the American people are not educated, they're not alert. They're all sitting in those deck chairs and they're complaining about the service, and that's on the deck of a sinking ship. So clearly you can say that there is a real case here to be made for some way to wake these people up and get them to bailing so that we can keep that ship from sinking.
Right, and
that's the apple seed program.
That's it. And I have to tell you, when I first became involved with the program, you know, I became involved with the program online without meeting anyone. And, you know, there's always that the worry in the back of your head whenever you start trying to find out what an organization is, what it's about. And, you know, there's always different questions. And I know that we get questions all the time if we're a militia or if we're some kind of a Second Amendment group or some kind of a training thing. And
or that there's something hidden that you don't know about and you'll find out about it later and then you regret finding out about it. And,
well, listen,
you can almost say the miracle of Appleseed is that, you know, what you see is what you get. There is nothing hidden.
And, you know, I'll tell you, I was a good example of that, because I thought, I said, you know, this is the message. The Appleseed message is too pure, it's too clean, the people are too nice, and you know what? I know this isn't legitimate.
Too good to be true.
It's too good to be true. And I guess I was with the organization for several months before I ended up meeting anyone face-to-face. And I believe that I talked to my wife about it before I left because I wanted to make sure, I wanted to meet some of the people and make sure it was a legitimate organization before I came to it, because, like I said, it just seemed too good to be true. And when I got to Ramser, in the back of my head was, okay, the first swastika I see, the first person that gives me the Heil Hitler salute, I'm out of here. Because it just seemed like it was too good to be true. And you know what? It's exactly what it says it is. There is no hidden message. There is no, there are no secrets. It's one of the most squeaky clean, above board operations I've ever seen in my life.
Yep, and partly that comes, I think, out of our emphasis on remembering the founders and the sacrifice they made for us, and particularly when we tell the story of April 19, 1775. And it's a story that most people never heard of, even back in the old days when they actually taught a little bit about April 19, 1775. When the people come to an apple seed and they hear that story, it has a resonance for most of them. In a way, it's like that story comes in, just kind of reaches into them and shakes that sleeping American that's inside them and, you know, wakes them up. And whenever that happens, we feel like we've actually accomplished our mission, because that's our mission, is to wake people up, get them out of the deck chairs, make them understand that the ship is sinking, but it doesn't have to sink. As you say, that there's hope. We get enough Americans bailing with buckets, the ship will never sink.
Right, and along with that, I get people asking me a lot of times about, okay, so we're waking people up, and we're getting them off the couch, and what's next? You know, what do we do after that? And then my answer is always, you get more people off the couch. You get the people you just woke up, and you chore them out with going and waking some other people up. There's no complicated formula to it. The fact is that the American people are the government, and if you can arouse enough of them out of their slumber and have them just think in a common sense fashion, then the country will start becoming cleaned up, because right now everyone is thinking that someone else is looking out for them.
Yep.
Well, I have a representative in the government, and I have a senator, and certainly they're watching out for me. Certainly they're taking care of me, and my answer is, nobody knows how to take care of you better than yourself, and ultimately that's your responsibility. And your responsibility is to get off the couch and ensure that your family and your home and your community is being looked after. And that's what we do. We get people off the couch, and we are going to continue doing that. Right now, that's all we can focus on. We don't have time for a lot of other projects other than getting everyone awake, getting everyone involved with the program.
You're exactly right. This program is so small still. I mean, we've made tremendous progress in the last 3 years, but I just told a group of apple seeders last weekend that you're still getting in on the ground floor. This is a ground floor program even now, because, when we shake the hand of the 10,000th apple seeder that shows up, who will show up in the next 12 months, that's not even a drop in the bucket. When we do the 100,000th apple seeder in the year 2012, under our current schedule, hopefully we'll be able to speed that up to 2011. But when we get to the 100,000th apple seeder, that's probably getting up to a drop in the bucket.
Right.
2016, when we get to the 1 millionth, now we're starting to talk some numbers. Now, understand that there's, 300 million Americans. So even when we reach the million level, we still have a tremendous task in front of us. And you can argue that even then we're still on the ground floor in this program.
And we would be, except that 1 million Americans with their eyes wide open and awake are worth 299 sleeping ones.
Absolutely.
You know, whenever I talk to the guys at Las Cruces in New Mexico, IBC, and at the end of the IBC, the instructor's boot camp, we were talking about the program, and they said, well, what are we going to do now, or who do we report to? And this is referring back to your talking about the ground level. And I said, you guys are it. I said, you guys are the New Mexico program. So we're going to form everybody up in New Mexico around you. So there's still plenty of states that are needing folks. And I always look at this as I have no doubts whatsoever that the APSE program is going to change the face of our country. And I always tell these people, look, I said, you have the opportunity right now to get in the program on the ground level so that whenever your grandkids are sitting on your knees, they can say, tell me the story again, Grandpa, about how you were the first guy in New Mexico to be in the Appleseed program. Did you really know Fred? Did you really know JB? It's just a very exciting time for the program and for the country because I can see it's a small light, but I can see a small bright light now that's going to start beginning to illuminate the country thanks to the program.
All too often people, even in this program, aren't thinking big enough. I had somebody say something the other day about, wow, you guys are having 300 apple seeds next year. That's really progress. Just, you know, that's only your fourth year. And you started off with 18. And I said, look, 300 is really nothing. What is that? That's an average of 6 per state for next year. I said, we won't even be moving on this program until we have 300 apple seeds a year in each state.
Exactly. Or until we start having 50 a weekend, every weekend.
The key to this program is getting the word out. There's so many Americans who would love to be in this program if they only knew about it. And that's, you've been part of this program long enough to know that basically all we are here is a bunch of average, everyday, ordinary Americans who've decided that spending another decade complaining about things isn't going to get us any further along than the last decade we spent complaining. And that if we really want to wind up in a different country in 10 years, we got to get out of the deck chairs ourselves and get busy and actually do something. And this program is driven by the fact that, which you mentioned earlier, that people come to an apple seed, and not everybody, but most of them, are kind of filled with that Revolutionary War message. And they understand that the most shameful thing you can do is to forget what those guys did back on April 19, 1775. And when they leave Appleseed, they leave Appleseed with that strong obligation on them that what was started back then 200 years ago should not be allowed to die on our watch. And there's no question it's about to die. You know yourself from the reading you've done in the Revolutionary War period that many of the founders made a sharp distinction between the Revolutionary War. To them, the Revolutionary War was merely the fighting part of the American Revolution. The American Revolution itself was something totally different. And you remember there's a teaser that we sometimes will say at an apple seed. We'll say, today you're going to learn some things you didn't know about your heritage, and about the foundation of the country. One of the things you're going to learn is the answer to the question of when and where was the American Revolution won. And naturally, when you ask that question, people will think, well, you know, maybe it was Yorktown, was it some other place, some other time. But we always tell them, we'll say, before the weekend's out, you will learn when and where the American Revolution was won. And at some time during the day, we'll mention John Adams' quote, where he said, the American Revolution was won before the first shot was fired. It was won in the hearts and souls of Americans. And that's, when you think about it, all of a sudden, at least for me, some blinkers fell off my eyes, and I realized, I said, you know, the Revolutionary War is history. It's supposed to be in the history books. It's supposed to be dates, places, people, acts. But the American Revolution is not something that was supposed to go to the history books. The American Revolution is something that's supposed to be alive now in the hearts and souls of every American. How can you claim to be an American if you don't know about and believe in the American Revolution that the founders created? And yet, you walk out your door, look over at your neighbor, you know, mowing his yard, and ask yourself, is this man heart and soul into the American Revolution? The answer clearly is no. It's a ludicrous question. And that's a question that would be ludicrous in terms of almost anybody you come across every day. Well, that's a family member, a coworker, a neighbor, or a friend. None of those people think of the American Revolution anymore. To them, it's all dead history. It's dead. It's in the past. It has no relevance. In a way, it's almost like, I know our own experience here in our local county with our county commissioners is that the Bill of Rights is some ancient decaying document that's under a piece of glass in Washington. It has nothing to do with the county commissioners. They can do anything they want to.
Well, a lot of people, the little bit they know of the Constitution or the Declaration of Independence or the Bill of Rights is just that that one little line that they've sliced out that was taught to them in school when the schools were teaching about the about our early history, and that's the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And they don't understand where they fit into that equation. Whenever you are an American, being an American isn't, you're not an American by virtue of soil you're born on or by what it says on your driver's license. Being an American means that you've accepted your part of the contractual agreement between you and your country. And that is that while you have these rights and these guarantees of freedom, that it's a two-way contract. And the other part of the contract is that you, each individual, accepting the good parts of the life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, also has the equal responsibility of each person of safeguarding those rights. And the only way to safeguard those rights is to be aware of what they are, where they came from, what was meant by them when the Founding Fathers put them in there. And there's no way you're going to do that by sleeping on the couch. There's absolutely no way. It's up to each individual. Well, we get the, I always think of Appleseed as like a starting gate or a launch pad, because when people come to Appleseed, as I said earlier, a lot of people, they show up in there, they have anxiety, they have worries. We do a meet and greet at the beginning of the thing, and when we talk about what the program is, what it offers, what they're going to go through that day, and then I'll usually ask some of the people to introduce themselves and just give me a real quick what it is, why they came, and one after the other will be answers that show some type of anxiety, some type of despair. But once they come to an Appleseed, and a lot of people don't have a lot of the skills or techniques, maybe a lot of the people have never done anything in their lives a lot of times where they succeeded at it. And they come to an Appleseed, and they learn to become reconnected with their heritage of rifle marksmanship. They come many times without ever having fired a rifle. We get them down. We give them the techniques that they'll need. We instruct them on the skills that they'll need to develop. And by the end of the Appleseed, they have developed those skills. And you can see the light come on in their eyes, in their mind, and what they've done is they've succeeded at something. They have actually cross that first finish line as a winner. And many times, that's all it takes to let them know that, yeah, they can learn something. They can learn to become the master of their rifle. And so here we go. And where do we go now? And we always tell them that the sky's the limit. From here on out, there's nothing that you can't do. And, I think you remember that with, when was it? It was a while back, but I don't, you remember that Ramsher, that woman, that I don't believe she had any type of shooting skills, but by the end of the day on Sunday, she had shot a very high score. And we just, the only reason we keep scores is to judge how well we're doing in teaching the technique, but you have to use something, and so we use scores, and she had developed her skills to the point that she had shot a high score, and she jumped up and down, and she started screaming when she saw her target. I thought that she was, that maybe she'd step on a snake or something. But she was so happy that she had shot such a high score and that she had done something and she'd become the master of it, or at least set out on the path to becoming a master of it, that I was just as happy as her. And you could see that it wasn't going to end there. She was going to keep going, and she was going to become a part of the program, and she was going to become involved in her life and in safeguarding the freedoms and liberties that the Founding Fathers had left us. Do you remember that woman? That was the one that she came up, and she had to show you her target, and she had to tell you that on the way home they were going to stop at Walmart, and she was going to buy her husband a pretty pink dress to wear the rest of the way home.
That one I do remember.
She had outshot her husband, and
mm-hmm.
And she was very, very excited. And that, to me, that makes it worth it every single time to see that the people who showed up under a cloud of despair and anxiety, that we've redirected them. To the fact that there's hope, and that they control their destiny and the country's destiny by their involvement.
Well, part of that anxiety is kind of an anxiety about, can they do it? Can they make the grade? And part of the anxiety is what a guy out in State of Washington told me after, you know, it was about, I guess we were a day and a half into the two-day appleseed, and he said, you know, what I expected, Fred, was, before I came here, was I expected to show up and find an environment filled with barking instructors, sort of like a boot camp thing. And we've had many people tell us that they're surprised and very pleasantly surprised to find out that what they find are people who are dedicated to, teaching them marksmanship and making them better shooters. But the anxiety with reference to can they do it? Do they have what it takes to do it? It's one of the things that most of them will lose in that first weekend, because they can actually see for themselves the progress. As you said, we keep score for a number of reasons, but as far as the individual is concerned, they keep a score so they can measure their progress. And most of these people will show up shooting double digits on the AQT, which is the Army Qualification Test. The max score on it is 250 points, so anybody who shoots under 100 points is totally unqualified. But most people will show up and they'll be shooting in the double digits, sometimes as low as 20 or 30 or 40 points. And most people will leave after 2 days shooting somewhere around 160 to 190, even 200, and usually about 10% of them will actually break through that magic 210, which would be considered by the Army to be an expert rifleman, which is the minimum that we set for saying that you've finally made the grade and become a rifleman. But, you know, a part of it, too, is all the history and the heritage, because you know as well as I do that being a rifleman is not just picking up a rifle and shooting a certain score. Being a rifleman is an attitude. It's a consciousness of being part of a tradition. It's an awareness that as you develop a skill, you are actually immersing yourself in a great stream that has flowed through American history and with great beneficial consequences for this country. You've heard the story of a rifleman at Saratoga who shot a British general and changed the course of that battle. Then there was another event that happened, I think it was in the War of 1812, where an American marksman shot a British general and saved, I think it was Baltimore, wasn't it? Saved Baltimore from a British invasion right after
right.
It burned Washington. So marksmanship has had a big role in our history, and I guess you could say it was right there at the beginning, which is why our Appleseed shirts, our RWVA shirts, all say, you know, all have April 19, 1775 in big letters. Underneath that it says where marksmanship met history, and the heritage was born. For heritage, you could use the word liberty just as well. Without marksmanship on April 19, 1775, this country would be a totally different country from what it is, or what it was.
Right, and I have the people that, you know, when somebody goes to an event like this, myself included, first time I went to an Appleseed, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what, I almost felt like not going because I was afraid that my personal rifle marksmanship skills were not going to be up to snuff, and then I was going to embarrass myself in front of all these these expert marksmen and sniper type shooters and everything else around me, and that was far, far from the case. Everyone there, first of all, Appleseed isn't a contest. It's not any type of a competition. The only person you're competing against is yourself, and it's just a very I'm not going to say it's relaxed or comfortable, because those are two of the words that we try and train ourselves not to use, but it was a very easygoing event. Everyone was welcomed, and everyone was learning at their pace. I still get people who are who will email me or talk to me about coming to an event, and they say, "Well, I'd like to come to one, but I don't feel like I'm not where I want to be yet as far as my shooting skills. So give me a chance to practice for a while and try and get up to speed, and then I'll come." And I'll tell you,
that's one of the ironies, isn't it? That people are going to learn to shoot so that they can show up at an event where they're supposed to learn to shoot already knowing how to shoot. Because they want to get their skills up so they're not embarrassed. And you think about it, there's a lot of silliness involved in that. RWV instructors see bad marksmanship all the time, and I would say almost with every shooter. On Saturday morning, that first event where they shoot the redcoats, very rarely does anybody cover themselves with any glory. And for the most part, bad marksmanship is so common that it's not, you don't even remark on it.
Why would
you remark on it? Everybody shoots bad. So, I mean, come on, let's move on.
Right, that's the whole point of coming to an event. You come here to the event to learn. You don't need to bring any special skills with you. Matter of fact, if you're not going to come here able to clean the redcoats and shoot out to 500 and clean your targets, then it's almost better that if you just showed up never having shot a rifle, because you're going to learn every single thing you need at the event. You're going to learn the fundamentals of shooting that no one ever taught you, that you never got a chance to learn in your shooting career, because a lot of people don't know them. And this, the stuff that we teach, it's not some kind of secret formulas that we cooked up ourselves. This program is based on hundreds of years of shooting experience, and the stuff that has been boiled down just to its most basic, simplest form. And we're going to teach you everything you need to know when you get here. Some of the best shooters at an event sometimes will be women and even young children, because they didn't bring any baggage with them. They've got their eyes and ears open, and they listen to everything that's said, and they put it to use, and they score really well.
Well, let me say that while you're absolutely correct that there's no black magic or any secret about any of the stuff we teach, I think the uniqueness of Appleseed is that we have actually come up with a very complete course of instruction that covers everything you need to know in order to become a rifleman, in order to develop the shooting skills of a rifleman. And in fact, that's one of the things we tell you at an Appleseed. We say some of you guys and gals are going to be shoot a rifleman score before you leave this weekend, but most of you aren't. But that's not anything that you should worry about, because it would be remarkable indeed if you learned all those skills and you know, polished them in a 2-day period to where you actually did shoot a rifleman score. I guess that's why only 10% on average make riflemen. It is tough to do in 2 days. And yet, if you take these skills home, we've given you the complete toolbox of skills you need in order to become a rifleman. So all you need to do is go home to your home range and practice. And practice until, you know, you make the grade.
Right. And, you know, whenever I went to the rifleman's boot camp, I happened to go with a VA shooter. And he is a very, very skilled. He's a great guy, very skilled. He shot competition for, I think, 30 or 40 years. He was on several of the United States teams. Great
Navy.
Shot.
He was a Navy shooter.
Right, he shot for the Navy.
And for those who know what a distinguished rifle badge means, he's got distinguished rifleman. There's only a few hundred of those that have been awarded. He's also distinguished pistol. You have to have real drive and ambition to get one, and you have to have extreme drive and ambition to get both of them. And one of the things that he said to me early on when he came to the program was he said he was just amazed at how we had taken all the fundamental information that you need in order to develop rifleman skills and put it into a 1-weekend-long program.
Right, boiled it down to the essentials. And even still, now this was the Rifleman's Boot Camp, the 8-day event. As skilled as he was, he still told me, he said, I learned a lot here. I learned a lot of stuff that I wish I would have learned at the beginning of my shooting career, because a lot of people want to shoot, competition, but how do they get started? Where are they going to learn the fundamentals of shooting? And here it is.
Well, I can tell you, if somebody's gone the high-power rifle route, that it is a slow way to learn how to shoot. I mean, if you stick to it, if you go to enough shoots, and there's occasionally times when a more experienced shooter will take a few minutes to give you some advice. And eventually you'll see an improvement in your skills. But that's far different. That process over a period of months and years is far different from coming to an Appleseed. And as you'll hear, once you get to an Appleseed, you're here. It's like drinking from a fire hose. I mean, we really do pour it all out on you. And we're working all day Saturday just to work on getting you to remember the basics. And then Sunday is primarily getting you to polish those basics, getting you to acquire the actual skills to do what we've told you on Saturday that you need to do.
Right. And I was with some high-power shooters in New Mexico, and I asked them, I said, well, can't you, like, how did you guys learn when you got started? I said, can't you just, like, ask the other high-power shooters and stuff about it? And they said, no, it's really not that easy. They said, a lot of people don't want to give you their secrets because, you know, it's competition. And that's exactly the opposite of here. We're going to give you every secret we know, and we're going to give it all to you in the first 2 days.
Yep, so, because we in our book, you learning how to shoot is a plus for everybody. When you learn how to shoot, it's a plus for me, and it's a plus for you, Scout. It's a plus for everybody in the program, and we actually believe it's a plus as far as playing your role in your country, the role that was intended for you by the founders. We feel that it strengthens the country to have more trained and skilled riflemen. And it's not just the skill that's important. It's the aspect of being a person who knows what he's doing. You remember yourself back in April 19, 1775, when the British were pretty soundly whipped and sent back to Boston. You remember the quote from the British general who led the brigade out that actually rescued the first British column when they got back to Lexington.
Mm-hmm.
And that British general had great contempt for Americans when he led his brigade out in that rescue effort. He thought they were, what was his quote? Something about Americans were unfit for military use. They were
beasts of burden.
Beasts of burden, that's right. They'd be in the back of any column that he was in command of. They'd be in the back carrying the cook pots and the tents.
Right, and Major Pitcairn, who fought along the route there too, his before Lexington and Concord, his estimation was, I have but to pull my sword halfway from its sheath, and I shall send the whole lot of them scurrying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure those are words that haunted him for the rest of his short life, because it ended just a few months later at the Battle of Bunker Hill.
Mm-hmm. But Percy, after that one experience that day when he barely got his brigade back to Boston, barely got them back. At one point, I'm sure he understood that if they didn't get back to Boston before sunset, they were going to be, they were just going to have to surrender. But you remember that he wrote back to a friend in England, and he said, whoever thinks this insurrection is going to be easy to put down is gravely mistaken. He said, they have men amongst them who know very well what they're about. And I guess you could say that knowing very well what you're about is something that every American should be able to say.
That's it, and that's
and you can't
one of
say
the things
that
we do.
You can't say that if you're sitting in those deck chairs while the ship's sinking. It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that an American would sit in the deck chair while the ship is sinking.
That's right. I gave the Titanic analogy last week, and one of the things I said was that we're looking for those people. We're actually creating them. But we're looking for those people who want to be part of the solution. And, I mean, if we have to, we'll drag you kicking and screaming to be part of the solution. But most Americans just need just a little bit of direction to it. But we're looking for those type of people who are willing to bail, who are not going to give up, the type of people who are willing to bail even as the water climbs above their waist, as it climbs above their chest, as the water touches their chin, they're still going to be bailing. General Washington was writing to Congress about the American troops, and he wasn't all that pleased in the beginning with some of the volunteers, because they were completely untrained, green, and new to combat. What he said he needed was, he needed men who were going to continue, who were going to fight, even though they knew that the battle may be lost, that even though they knew they may fall into the hands of the enemy, that they would continue to fight until the end, because no battle is going to turn in your favor and let you win it if you have given up before. So we need the people that are committed to bailing, the people that are committed to staying with it for the long haul. This isn't something that we're going to get accomplished this week or this year or next year or the year after. This is a program that's anchored down, that's we're in it for the long haul.
Well, this is a mission-oriented program. The mission is to save the country, and we're not going to stop the mission until the country's saved.
Well, I'm just, every time I go to an Appleseed, every time I meet another group of folks, I get recharged. You know, there's a, I first heard this from JB, I'm sure it's not his, but he still tells me, he said, there's nothing like the company of riflemen. If you could spend all your time in the company of riflemen, wouldn't it be a great world? And someday we will, but right now we'll have to settle for the weekends. I put on the blog page here that a rifleman never stops learning. A rifleman never stops teaching. A rifleman always continues to seek ways to protect the freedom the founding fathers left us, to prove himself, his family, his home, his community, his state, and his country. Every single day of his life, a rifleman adapts, a rifleman overcomes, and a rifleman persists. And a lot of times, I think some, at least before, when people are just hearing it, they think this is some kind of a dramatic rhetoric. But this isn't something that we take lightly or that we say lightly. This is a code that we live by. And you know, the way that I feel is there is nothing wrong, no matter how many of people nowadays try and tell you that there is something wrong or something corny or cavemanish or stupid or outdated with having a code to live by in your life. And most Americans have forgotten what a code even is, let alone what the code of being American is. And the Appleseed program is here to help them remember. Get them off the couch and help them remember what that code is.
Absolutely. And it's amazing to me that something as simple as telling them the story of April 19, 1775 can actually move them in a significant direction.
Well, I'll get people at the end of the event that will be talking to me. And, you know, one of the first things they'll say is, this was completely different than what I expected. I wasn't expecting this at all, especially not the history or the story. They say, you know what, I had a great time shooting. I had a great time meeting all the new people. But I would have come just to hear the story. And I tell the instructors when we're talking about it, that's what makes us who we are, is the ability to tell the story of April 19, 1775. And I don't mean just a dry recitation of it. I mean the ability to tell the story and believe it, and let the people know that you believe it, because the people who are listening to the three strikes. You have an audience there who they want to hear the story. They want to hear it. And they're not going to care if you mess up a date or you pronounce a name wrong or something like that. It doesn't matter. The idea is to get the story out and let them know that you believe it. Because if you believe it and you tell it like you believe it, then they're going to believe it too. Because it is an amazing story of the beginning of our country, an amazing group of people who sacrificed in some cases all, who gave all so that we could have what we have today. America didn't just pop out of the void today with the fast cars and big screen TVs and Walmarts and stuff. It had to be built on, with blood and sweat and courage. When you look at those men who had signed the Declaration of Independence, and you see in the very middle of it John Hancock's large signature, and to this day people still say put your John Hancock on it, and they don't know where that came from, and they don't understand what it meant. What it meant was those guys having enough courage and enough dedication that they knew the minute they signed that document and they published it, they had to win. There was no turning back. Benjamin Franklin joked about we should all hang together on this, or we shall surely hang separately. And it was a joke, but it was exactly what he meant it to be, which was gallows humor. Mm-hmm. And the reality of it was, the minute those men signed that Declaration of Independence, they had forfeited their lives unless the American Revolution was won, because they had instantly become traitors, and they were going to be hunted down and hung, every man of them, if they didn't succeed.
And when I tell the story of April 19th at an Appleseed, and I start right off with Paul Revere's ride, and point out that as he made his famous ride, he didn't stop at houses at random. He stopped at houses, and the houses he stopped at, there would be one or two other riders who would fan out in different directions. And that historians have estimated that by dawn, remember that he made his ride at midnight, historians have estimated that by dawn of April 19th, there were 14,000 armed Americans marching toward Concord. And I point out, they didn't have internet back then. They didn't have cell phones. They didn't have fax machines. And I usually add, some of them didn't even have regular phones. And you think about that. 14,000 people in 6 hours. And then you ask people in Appleseed, you've got a cell phone, internet, and regular phones. How many people could you get to show up at dawn tomorrow if you've discovered at midnight tonight, and there's no doubt about what you find out, but you find out and discover that there's going to be a serious threat to liberty that takes place at dawn. How many people could you get to show up?
Yeah, and I see everybody's head immediately kind of drop down because they know it's going to be a low number.
That's right. When you start going down through the numbers, you say, okay, let's make it easy. How many of you could get 10,000? I mean, they got 14,000 back then, but remember, they didn't have the internet and cell phones, etc. So you should be able to get at least 10,000. And of course, as you say, the heads are looking down. You say, let's make it even easier. Who can get 1,000? And the heads sometimes get even lower, and you say, well, let's make it just ridiculously easy. How many of you can get 100? And I remember at one Appleseed, a guy actually raised his hand, but, I really didn't believe him. But then you get down to 10, and then occasionally you get somebody to raise their hand. But I've been to plenty of Appleseeds where nobody raised their hand at 10. And then you hit them with a punchline. And the punchline is, how do you measure the value of liberty in a society? How do you measure the depth of allegiance that a society has to liberty? And the answer is obvious. It's by the number of people willing to turn out and defend it. And then you say, back on April 19, 1775, they had 14,000 willing to turn out. And how many can we get to turn out on 6 hours' notice? And which society valued liberty more? the people 200 years ago or the people now. And I'll tell you this, usually by that point, you've really got their attention.
Right, and people, the difference between people now and people then were, is that the people, the colonials and the people of those times, they never would have thought that the government was going to give them anything, provide them anything, save them in any way. They never assumed that. And much more important was that than that is they never wanted that. They didn't want the government to take care of them. They wanted to do it on their own, just like they did everything else in their lives, just like they made their clothes and they made their food and they made their own way in life. And now everyone assumes that somebody else is going to take care of it. The government's going to take care of us. They're going to save us. Or search and rescue, they'll come and get us. Or somebody will bring some food to my door and save me. And that's what we've become.
If I can make an even more fundamental suggestion, and that is they didn't have TVs back then. And they didn't have computer games. So what did they do? They talked about things. They talked about things that were important. They talked about issues of liberty, of government, of trade even. And these are people back then that, for the most part, didn't even have high school educations. There were a few that went to college and became doctors, but most of them didn't even get out of grammar school.
Right, they weren't what people now think of as educated or intelligent. But I'll tell you what, you go back to and you read the Constitution of these United States. You read the Declaration of Independence or the Bill of Rights. And you would have to search long and hard today to find someone, to find a group of men who could put their heads together and design a document so brilliantly as they did. We think of them as even a lot of people nowadays think of them as what like the British regulars thought of them, as in country people or bumpkins, and they were far from that. They were very far from that. Even if they weren't educated, they still had common sense, which so many people today have traded in for remotes and computers and everything else.
And you can see the results if you can buy or rent a copy of a movie called Idiocracy, which stars Luke Wilson. And it's set in the future of America, 500 years in the future. As I recall, it starts off saying something with a narration that says, it was the great garbage avalanche of 2505 that started the events in motion.
The great garbage avalanche.
And the,
I can see that coming.
People in 500 years from now have been so dumbed down that they really can hardly even support themselves. I mean, they don't know how to raise food or anything, and the garbage they just keep piling up in big piles. It's a film that's will repay you to rent it or buy it and watch it. Luke Wilson is the star in it. He's a pretty good character, but it will sure as heck make you think, and I'll bet you anything that if you get that movie and you watch it, one of the first thoughts you'll have is, wait a minute, this film is supposed to be 500 years in the future, but it looks more like it's 10 or 15 or 20 years in the future. And you have to say to yourself, the people that were actors in the film weren't really acting. They were just being themselves.
Yeah, we were talking about that this last weekend in New Mexico, and about what people... about how America has become, how we're de-evolving. We think that we're getting smarter, and on some levels, of course, we naturally are, but on more basic levels, I'll tell you what, you try to find if the whole economic and network had broken down. You try and find somebody that's going to knit you a shirt or make you some butter, anything like that, because it's not going to happen. They've lost the ability. Most people have lost the ability to take care of themselves. They're, in one way or another, they're depending on someone else to take care of them, whether that's the government, the school board, the electric company. They're always depending on somebody else to take care of them. So they've lost the drive to take care of themselves, because somebody's going to take care of them. And that floods over into the same thing with the country. Somebody's going to take care of the country, right? I mean, somebody's obviously watching the ship. Somebody's at the wheel, right? Because that would be the common sense thing to do. But without each person, each American being awake and being and charging their duty, fulfilling their duty of safeguarding their own rights and liberties, then they're definitely in for some trouble down the road.
Well, the nice thing is that while it would be nice to wake up every American, it's probably not going to happen. Certainly not on our watch, but as I said, the nice thing is you don't have to wake up every American. What is that quote from? I think it was from Sam Adams, who says it's not the majority that counts, it's a vociferous minority that makes a difference.
Yeah, and we see that every day here.
If we get 1% of Americans woke up, it's gonna wind up being a snowball effect. 1% is gonna wake up 3%, and then 3% will wake up 9%. If we do 1 million by 2016, and I'm as aware as you are that when you start a program and say every year we're gonna double, everybody knows that can only be kept up for a certain amount of time. I mean, if we were to carry the doubling out from 2016 by 2024, we'd have more than 300 million Americans. That's how fast the doubling effect works. But
right.
I think we can carry the doubling out to 2016 fairly easily, because the well is so deep that even in 2016, when we had 1 million, we're only talking about, 1/3 of 1%? So we still only reached 90. We still have not reached 99.5% of Americans, even when we reach that first million. Excuse me, 99.67%.
Right. Right. And I think
so. There'll still be room to grow in 2016. In fact, you may get in this program in 2016, and somebody will say, "Well, welcome. You're still getting in on the ground floor of the Appleseed program."
And you will be. You still will be, because. You know, at the core of what the Appleseed program is about is having the program reach all the way down into every state and every city and county and into every neighborhood, so that when you walk out the door to get the paper, you turn to the person that's across the street getting their paper and you say, "Hey, when's the next shoot?" And that's where we're supposed to be headed, and I can see us going there. I can see us going there at a fast pace, because it was just 2 years ago, and there's nobody all the way to I believe it was last month. My wife and kids were excited when they got home to tell me that even out here in the middle of nowhere, they saw a guy riding a motorcycle with an Appleseed T-shirt on.
Hmm. Well, I think we've given out pretty close to 8,000 T-shirts now.
Wow.
And next year we should be giving out another 8,000. So our T-shirt lady's real happy of that.
They are.
But you know, you are seeing Appleseed T-shirts on the news. I remember that back when they were reporting on the Supreme Court hearing on the, defining the Second Amendment.
The D.C. Heller case.
Yeah, the you remember there was an image of some people out in front of the Supreme Court. One of them had on an FSA T-shirt.
Yeah, that's right.
I found out later on he was from Maryland.
Well, it's a program whose time has come, and the message is a pure and simple message, which is the government, the power, lies in the people as it was meant to. And
well, it's actually, if you don't mind me interrupting here, it's actually a simpler message than that. It's a Paul Revere message. The ship is sinking. You need to get out of the deck chair and start bailing.
Well, right, yeah.
The first thing you do when you get out of the deck chair, actually and technically the first thing you do is you don't start bailing, you start getting other people out of the deck chairs.
Exactly.
Until we finally have enough people bailing to make a difference.
Yeah, because you running down with the bucket, running down to the bilge and getting in and trying to run back up the stairs with the bucket is no good. You got to set up a bucket line, a bucket brigade.
Yep.
I'm thinking about already like into 2020, when we've woken up a great deal of people, and they understand what they are, but we're nowhere near that right now. But we're working on it every day, and a lot of people still at this point. And we went through this about a year ago, and it seemed to cause some grief because people wanted to jack with the program and try and turn it into something that it couldn't be. Who knows what it can be in another 10 or 15 years? Nobody knows. But for right now, the only thing it can be is what it is, and that's a wake-up call. And that is to help build the program each person getting involved in it, and then getting everybody that touches them involved in it. And right now, that's all. We have a hard time just doing that,
right?
Let alone anything else.
I guess you could say that was one of the surprises, and it may have been a surprise to you as much as it was to me. When you start a program like this, you think all you got to do is go up to that guy sleeping on the couch in front of the TV, and you just tap him on the shoulder and say, hey, let's go. You know, liberty's in danger. The ship's sinking. Come and help us bail. And then to your surprise and sometimes to your disgust, you find that the guy shakes his head no. He doesn't want to wake up.
Right.
And he knows, he suspects that, you know, if he does respond to the call, that he will have to indeed get off the couch and do something that he's afraid of, some work or some discomfort.
Right, I wrote about that.
It's a sad thing.
It is, and it is hard, like you said, because I'd written about that in one of our blogs, and there's a blog here at the radio location, but there's also a blog, and we've connected to that on the page to appleseedinfo.org/blog. And that's where we write about stuff that isn't just purely Appleseed events, how to set them up and stuff like that. We at the Appleseed Forum, it's just a work forum. We have so much to do, so little time to do it, that we can't spend a lot of time chatting about social things or about what the best backpack to buy is or anything like that. We're mainly committed to getting the message out as fast as we can. But at the blog, we take a few minutes to write about other things. And one of the things I wrote about was that that many people in America are committed to not recognizing that there's a problem, because if you recognize that there's a problem, then you're immediately confronted with having to do something about it. Now, as long as you deny that there's a problem, then everything is just peachy. It's like the grandmother or the grandfather that's sick or ailing or perhaps dying. If you recognize that, then you're duty-bound to do something about it, to give them some kind of help. But if you can keep your head in the sand long enough, then hopefully not too long in the future, the funeral will make things all better. and it will make everything right.
Hmm.
But we can't afford that here because if Americans keep their head in the sand long enough, the country is going to die. And when the country dies, there's no fixing it. It's, when it's dead, it's dead. And
when the country dies, you and your family wind up in the water. After the ship sinks, you wind up in the water, treading water. And maybe some people have built a little lifeboat for themselves, but I don't know. I don't think the lifeboat's ever going to be near as satisfactory as the Titanic was when the ship was well-maintained. I was thinking while you were talking, this is a strange program in other ways, too, because we don't really tell people how to think. We don't really tell them you should think this or you should think that. What we do, aside from teach them how to shoot well and make them understand that doing that is part of a tradition and part of their heritage, the only other thing we do is we tell them the story of April 19, 1775, and sometimes some of us will mention some other stories from the Revolutionary War, but primarily it relates to April 19, 1775. And we have pretty much universal assumption in this program that that's really all you need to tell them. If you tell them that, they will go on to figure out what their opinion should be on any number of things. And you can trust them. You can trust them to figure out things the right way. So that anybody, once he's been to an apple seed and once he's been exposed to the story of the first day in the history of his country, he's probably going to find that his life has changed, his thought processes have changed. In fact, somebody told me just the other day that Appleseed can be a life-changing experience. And I and you have both seen people whose lives have been changed.
Well, I haven't just seen
by being in this program.
I've been that person. I tell the people at the Appleseed every time they come, I say, you know what? Appleseed is a life-changing experience. If you come to the event and you're there on Sunday when we give the what we call the benediction, whenever you're there and we give the benediction, your life is going to change. Whether you accept the change and go along with it is up to you, but your life is going to change. You can never go back to who you were.
Mm-hmm.
You can never go back to sleep, at least not with a clear conscience. You can go back to sleep, but not with a clear conscience. Your life is changed. Well, I see we're getting down to the wire here. I want to thank Fred for calling in. I always enjoy speaking with Fred. It seems like there's not a lot of not enough hours in a day a lot of times to do it. And we're actually working on another show. We're not going to let the cat out of the bag yet on what we're going to do, but we actually have another show that we might be putting up in addition to this one. And we'll let you guys know when it gets closer to it. Be sure and log on to the forum or log on to the website appleseedinfo.org or rwva.org. And then if you listen to this show, then go ahead and leave the comments for it. Let us know the things that you want to hear or the things that you want us to talk about so that we can make the show better and get the info out the best way that we can.
What do you say we leave with a final word here?
Okay, let's hear it.
And the final word is, for gosh sakes, whatever you do, let's get out of the deck chair and let's start to save this country. You will not regret coming to an apple seed. So your first step would be to go to our website, look at the Appleseed schedule. If there's not one near you anytime soon, start looking around for a suitable place for us to bring the Appleseed program right there where you are.
All right.
And whatever you do, get out of the deck chair and let's try to save this country.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And be sure and tune in this next week. Look on the segments for when we're going to be. We'll be next Wednesday. And we look forward to seeing everybody or to hearing everybody then. Thank you, Fred, for calling in and giving us your time. We sure appreciate talking with you.
My pleasure.
All right. Good night, everyone.